with us on a journey into the unknown, the unexplained, and the unbelievable. We will test your senses and challenge your beliefs. A world where science and religion clash. Or do they? You will meet real people and hear real stories, but you will not believe. You will witness strange sights and hear strange sounds, but you will not believe. This is the New England Ghost Project. Welcome to the nightmare.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Ghost Chronicles right here on TojiNet. I am Ron Cole, your host, the gatekeeper of the realm, the unknown, the unexplained, and the unbelievable New England's own Van Helsing. With me is my co-host, the amazing Mr. Steve Parsons.
I'm glad to hear you survived the eclipse.
Yes, survived the eclipse.
Yeah.
The most useless event in the world, but that's besides the point.
Well, scientists would disagree with you.
No, I am a scientist, and I don't disagree.
No,
and their problem is they just fell into
it
the height.
No.
Like everybody else.
No, total solar eclipses allowed us to test Einstein's theory regarding the bending of light by gravitation.
Let's see, we've been doing it for 2,000 years now, so you think we'd get that down.
No, Einstein only came up with this theory about 120 years ago.
Yeah, well, the freaking ancients understood the eclipse. People drove thousands of miles. Others drove the 5 minutes or whatever the hell it was of the total eclipse.
Well, NASA got excited as well. But you did make
NASA get excited about everything. What do they get? They got to have something.
Oh, my God. Says a man who's doohickeys on the moon.
Yeah, but, that's light.
Or in a movie backlot somewhere in California.
Yeah, a movie backlot. I think it's a movie backlot. But, the reason I'm not impressed is it's like, we see the super moon, that's cool. We see high tides, that's cool. I mean, but, it's just an event. It's nothing, the pandemic, okay, that was excited about because we didn't understand it. We didn't know what was going on. But
well,
we
came
can
from
predict
a,
this,
came
and
from
we can predict the next one, and the next one, and the next one, and the next one.
I thought the pandemic came from a lab in Wuhan funded by
but
US
we didn't know what was going
Anthony
on.
Fauci.
Yeah.
Well, obviously the US government did.
Well, who cares about the US government? We're talking about that. I mean,
hey, you did make me laugh, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah, your post.
My post. I have lots of posts.
Yes. The one about the traditional total eclipse dinner.
Yeah, give me I know.
I chuckled when I read that.
Yeah, well, you have to do it naked, but I didn't put that part in there. You have to cook it naked,
Oh.
Yeah. While singing Total Eclipse of the Heart, it's part of the ritual.
Did you see the hijacked news feed video?
I did not.
Oh. Somebody in one of the news media in America they're in big trouble.
Yeah.
Because they cut into the live eclipse feed with their own eclipse video.
Nice job, guys.
It was amusing.
But yeah, I mean the eclipse was cool. Don't get me wrong. I mean it's wicked cool. If it happened outside my house or a few miles away, then it's worth.
What were you about 98%?
Yeah, well, probably closer to 95 or 96. Wasn't that?
All right. Yeah, well, had ours in. Is it 2017?
Yeah.
And we were at 90. Well, where we were, I could have driven a couple of hundred miles, but we were at 99.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen it before. It's not like it's a new one. There's a guy in Texas that's seen 13 of them. So that gives you an idea how.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
predictable, how
the next
notable.
One's, yeah. The next one's coming along in 26. They're quite common.
Yeah, they are. And speaking about that, if you do have a pair of eclipse glasses, There are organizations such as Astronomers Without Borders, which cracks me up, is collecting them and sending them to these countries that are having the next eclipse so they don't go to waste, which is a good idea. Not a good idea for the companies that make them, but good idea for the Earth.
I've still got my original. I used a welding mask last time.
Oh, really?
Which was suitably decorated.
I think I used welding glasses or something. Wait a minute, special glasses we had in chem lab.
We had Mylar. I mean, everybody was selling the Mylar film. Glasses with, you know, the cardboard. But I just dragged out a welding mask. Used that. Worked perfectly. You know,
the only good thing about it, well, not the only good thing, but one of the good things that came about is people got interested in a little bit of science. You know, people went out there and made handhold cameras and stuff like that. So
yeah, it's never a bad thing. I'll tell you what, it's a cool phenomena.
Don't get me wrong, Steve. It's just way overhyped.
Well, come on. Yeah, I mean, it was the end of the world. You had an earthquake in New York.
Yeah, I got my toilet paper and water and milk.
NASA launched 3 rockets, you know, during the eclipse, and, you know. But what is a cool phenomena that I saw, and I noticed that lots of other people commented on this time around, was the leaves on the tree act as pinhole lenses, or the gaps between the tree leaves on the trees act as pinhole lenses, and you get these really weird disc-like circles on the ground.
I know, cool, huh?
That's, you know, and the fact that, you know, they measured the temperature drop at 4 Celsius.
Measure that, because since I got a new weather station for Christmas, there was a 6-degree temperature drop, which is, you know, considerable.
You know, I mean, over 4 minutes, it does show you just how much heat that the sun does, you know, give to us. And, you know, the birds, I remember when we had ours, and it was quite cool to watch all, you know, like, it really screwed up with the birds and the animals, because they'd like, what the hell's going on? Oh, it's bedtime. Well, and ours was really early in the morning. So, like, they'd only just woken up, and it was like, bloody hell, that was quick.
What the hell? I know, huh?
But we saw the eclipse as well here in the UK.
You did?
Or here in the far west of the UK, we had clear skies right at the end of the day, and we had a 45% partial eclipse.
Okay, yeah, that's cool. I mean, that's all cool stuff.
Well, it is, and it was made even cooler by the fact that it started 1 minute before sunset.
Huh.
So just as you could see the eclipse, the sun disappeared.
But, you know, I mean, it's just what killed me is the overhype and the thing. It was what a spiritual experience. And like, oh, my, please, please, please.
Well, Anne and I, years ago, went to see out to one of the stone circles in the middle of the UK. We had the, you know, I mean, I've had 3 total eclipses that I've seen. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have a total. We went to the stone circle. So it was about a 96, 97 where we were, but we'd gone to the stone circle. Right. And there were all manner of wackos and weirdos there with, you know,
we can't say that.
Drums and people feathers.
Different face, that's all.
No, these were wackos. And, you know, all manner of druids and hippies, and you can imagine they were all praying and chanting and beating drums, and that was more fun than the eclipse, if I'm honest.
Oh, of course it is. People observing is much more fun than
the event. Oh yeah, yeah. And it was and all these nutcases had to cross a field full of bulls to get to it as well, which was, and the bulls weren't that friendly.
So, yeah, I love, I have the ability, and you probably do too, but the ability to pick up on conversation, to auto block conversation too, by the way. I enjoy that. So a lot of times I'll be, you know, hear something and I'll peek up and just zone in on it, and able to listen to the conversation. It's intriguing at times the way people think.
We've talked about this before, but one of the great fascinations for me because as you know, I started out as a youngster wanting to see a ghost.
Yeah.
But then, you know, realizing that that was more difficult than the books make it out to be. And then you start getting fascinated by that other question, why do people see ghosts? And mm-hmm. then you become fascinated by people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, listening to, talking to witnesses, describing their experience, interpreting their experiences, or even when you go on a public access investigation, listening to the different people that have gone there, describing, you know, and interacting with one another, it could be really fun and fascinating.
I'd like those
insights into human psychology and sociology.
Yeah, I like the public ones because in reality, especially if you're hosting and stuff, you can't say anything. So you kind of bite your tongue on it, but you're observing and listening at the time. So it makes it even more intriguing to me in a lot of ways.
You become, you know, one of my guilty pleasures is just sitting, you know, sometimes at a coffee shop, just watching the world go by, watching people, the odd snatch of conversation, you know, mm-hmm. people watching. It can be a great pastime.
Yeah, I have. Today it was supposed to happen, but it didn't, unfortunately. But and the warning show, I'm going to have Dr. Kim Lannon, who's a psychologist.
Oh, God.
And we're going to be talking about psychology of spirit and stuff like
that.
Oh,
God.
A lot of things. So I'm excited about that. I've had her on the show before a couple of times, I believe. And she's.
Do you know, I've never met a psychologist. I was talking to someone about this the other day.
He's an analytical psychologist. So.
Well, no, it doesn't matter what branch of psychology they're in. I've never met a psychologist yet who doesn't have a psychological issue. And I've always wondered if that's what draws them. You know, this like, well, I'm screwed up, so I'm going to study other people who are screwed up.
Mm-hmm. I always wondered about that. In fact, one of my things I was going to ask you about on the show is what I need to get a psychology degree.
You need to get a psychology degree?
Yes, what do I need as far as credits and stuff? Because I have a degree already. So I want to know.
Nothing.
We need nothing. You need a degree for a psychology.
No, you don't. No, you don't. Here in the UK, you can go to a university, give them money, undertake 3.5 years of study, and get a psychology degree. You don't need any prior qualifications.
No, I mean, but you need for 3.5 years, you're studying something to get your degree. You have to.
Oh yeah, I mean, you're studying
courses. That's what I'm trying to find out. See,
sorry, I thought you were talking about what's the entry qualification.
No, not entry. No, I'm not worried about entry yet. That's not a problem at all. But my problem is, a lot of, I already have my degree, so a lot of my degree must be credited to the psychology degree in itself, because there are certain courses that are mandatory, and depending on, I don't know if a psychology, is it a psychology, a BS or a BA?
It used to be a BA, now it's a BSc.
Oh, it is. Okay.
But it used to be a BA.
Yeah.
But I can only speak with any understanding of the UK provision, because
yeah, I know that's the other thing. Yeah,
the American education system is a little different.
Mm-hmm.
Because here in the UK, we have. Do you have anything similar to the Open University, which is a government-supported open access, as the name implies? Anybody can apply to attend the courses. The courses are delivered modularly online. The lectures are presented online, and you do all the work at home and then submit various theses.
They do have. There are certain universities that offer online degrees, state only offers only an associate's degree as far as free. And that's only lately. They've been low tuition, but we have state-run universities and colleges, and those are lower tuition rates than they used to be.
Well, here in the UK, you can also get government or regional grants that will actually pay substantially towards you getting a degree if you are a mature student.
Yeah, we have certain ones here too, similar to it.
Oh, right. So, yeah. Well, yeah. Why are you thinking of getting?
You'd have to check out. You know, I would have to.
Are you thinking of getting your psychology degree?
I am thinking about getting a psychology degree. I don't know how serious I'm thinking about it, but I am thinking about it.
We used to say it's probably one of the easiest ones to get because, you know, it was always an easy option at school. You know, if you're going to do psychology, it was always one of the easy ones to do. Because as with all stuff, it's about more remembering the information, Uh-oh. Isn't it? You know, it's about remembering dates, times, references. Uh-oh. Uh-oh. Mm-hmm. And in terms of developing a thesis, it was always, you know, sold to us anyway, psychology is the study of the bleeding obvious.
That's funny.
Because it's something we all do every day.
Yeah. I know, like, you know, because I have my science degree in environmental science is a BA, not a BS. So as part of the BA, I had to take humanitarian courses as well, which included psychology courses as well as sociology courses. So I'm just curious if what the, you know, what the criteria is. I don't know. It'd be interesting.
There's a lot of people go, you know, I know quite a lot from the paranormal community that have gone on to getting psychology degrees, but then, you know, and some have gone further, masters, PhDs.
Yeah.
But a lot of people then question, what have I gained?
I know.
I've done 3.5. In fact, you know,
I know yourself as, you know, you haven't rushed out to get your degree.
Because I was talking to our mutual friend, Dr. Winsper, who did continue and got her PhD. And, you know, occasionally she bemoans the fact that she's done all of that work, but for what? What does she get in return?
That's common, though, in a lot of degrees, not just psychology.
I know. She gets a little bit of status because she can call herself doctor.
Mm-hmm.
But realistically, in terms of recognition, in terms of professional standing, in terms of, you know, she's questioned the bangs for the buck value of it.
Yep. Yeah. Well, like I said, I'm just exploring it, and that's not something, you know, it's something it might be worth a look at, but I don't know if I'm, you know.
Well, people have asked me, you know, other people have asked me, is it something that they should consider? And I've always said yes, because education is always a good thing, because learning is always a good thing. And secondly, because it does encroach heavily on studying the paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are a great many of crossover elements between psychology and parapsychology. And I would, you know, always suggest to people, go get some learning. Learning is always a good thing. It doesn't matter what age you are either.
And you always said that yourself, Steve, which is, I think, one of the best quotes in the paranormal, is that if somebody asks you if you believe in ghosts, you say, I believe people believe in ghosts or see ghosts or whatever it is. But that's psychology right there, is trying to understand what they saw or what their experiences were, which is kind of intriguing. It's pretty much, you know, and it sounds terrible, but a study in magic is also, you know, useful.
Sociology is also anything that helps you. In fact, you know, you've already got a science degree, but I've suggested to people, you know, go back and get, you know, redo your high school physics, redo your high school, you know, science qualifications.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, this is stuff that we learned when we were 10, 11 years of age, and a lot of it you don't use, so it gets forgotten. And you forget the basic stuff, and it doesn't hurt to touch base. I mean, I've still got some high school physics books, And do you know what? Genuinely, hand on heart, occasionally, a couple of times a year, mm-hmm. I'll pick them up and I'll go through the stuff just to keep myself, you know, sort of, oh, yeah. So that equals that, and that does that, and that
yeah,
means
see,
that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Steve, because we do. We, you know, even myself with all the science degree, I mean, environmental science is a study of just all the sciences, so there's so much you have to understand. And you forget things. You really do. I mean, yeah. you go beyond it. And, you know, your brain can only retain so much. So, especially mine. So it's a good thing. Refresher. I like that idea a lot.
Yeah. I mean, it's in everyday life. And, you know, I was telling one of the things that I incorporated into Ghostology is a lesson I learned, which is we buy these bits of technology. You know, we buy a camera, we buy an audio recorder, it comes with an instruction manual. And, you know, you learn how to operate it and then you put it back in the bag. And it might be 3 months, it might be 4 months, it might be, you know, some time before you need to use it. And then you pick it up out of the bag and you go, I can't remember how to change that setting.
That's true.
Particularly, you know, with the modern equipment. So yep. I've always, you know, in Ghostology, I've always said, because all of the instruction manuals available online, download them, store them onto your phone. You've always got the instruction manual, and write yourself out a little bit of, you know, to change the settings.
Yeah, cheat notes.
Little cheat notes.
Yeah.
And stuff them into the bag. Because, you know, in 6 months' time, that thermometer that you knew how to change between Celsius and Fahrenheit by pressing button A 3 times and then holding button B, you take it out the bag and you go, I can't even remember how to switch the bloody thing.
That's right. That's why all these ghost devices are so popular, is because people don't know. You know, they just say, oh, I can turn it on and it's doing something. And, oh, look, it went off. So, therefore, it's like, yeah, they don't know. I mean, how many people have, you know, it's especially now since the price is going down. I mean, FLIR, how many people have a FLIR and they still totally don't understand it? FLIR offered a free class in it.
They still do. You can still do. It's now all done online. Instead of back in the day when you and I did it, you went to a regional.
Yeah, it was great.
Place, and you all gathered together. Yeah, and they served coffee and biscuits,
sandwiches.
But now it's all free and it's all online. I mean, you can download and play them back at your leisure. You don't have to attend and do it on a particular day. You can do in bite-sized chunks to suit yourself, but nobody ever does. And it's the same as nobody ever really reads the instruction manuals. You know, over here in the UK, there's a saying that I often use, which is RTFM. Why is that RTFM? What do you mean RTFM? Read the fucking manual. And if you don't know, Google it.
See, the thing is, too, is people don't want to feel stupid. So they say, well, they'd rather just wing it than try to. Yeah. Say, oh, I got to check on that, or I have to go back and look on that. I'm trying to understand. I forgot. You know, I've forgotten how it worked. Again, yeah. Or whatever.
People are frightened to admit that they're human. I have, you know, I have lots of technology at my disposal, some of which I probably haven't used for 2 years. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, I maintain it. I change the batteries and check the functions. But it might be 2 years till it's next used at Anger. And, it's like, I need to refresh myself. You know, don't guess, because if you guess, that's when the measurements go wrong. That's when you get bad data. That's when you make mistakes. Don't ever afraid to admit that you're human and go, hang on a minute, let me just double check this. It's not a bad thing.
Yeah, you know, I always say, you know, I don't read, but in reality I do, because if I'm researching something, I'm trying to understand something, then I have some books that I go to and I pull out and find when I want to do it. Yes, I don't sit down and read the whole freaking book, but they're there for me because of that reason, because I can't remember everything. And
Well, who can? I mean, yeah, I do actually know people with photographic memories.
Yeah, I know that. They are
genuinely, you know, awe-inspiring people.
Not everyone.
Yeah, they can pull name, dates.
My son is like that.
Yeah, and, you know, it's an incredible skill that I don't have. I remember concepts.
Exactly.
You know,
he goes into minutia. The details of it, which
I don't, and as we've said before, I don't need that because I just need to know that it's what in that book and it's on there, yeah, and then go find it.
Yeah.
Never be afraid to learn. Learning is a good thing.
Yeah. So, anyways, I know we're coming up towards a break, but I did want to mention that I saw you knew King's on the 10-pounder on the news today.
Oh, yeah, we're getting all the new coins this year. But, you know, coin collectors are speculating that there might be extra collectible because he might not be around for very long. I'm serious. People are starting to, you know, oh, well, we should collect these because it could be a very short reign.
That's the Mint doing it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's, old, you know what's funny? Buck. You know what's funny? Now, the last person on your note was the Queen, right?
That's right.
So I find that interesting because here in the States, we're totally opposite. We only put dead people in ours. And you have live people in yours, but we only put dead people.
No, we've always, I mean, it goes back 2,000 years,
mm-hmm.
You know, having the monarch on the coinage. Because it was originally the way of the monarch saying, "Hey, people, this is what I look like."
And plus, you know, that's why you're getting this money because of me.
But the monarch's portrait was put onto the coinage so that people would, you know, it was kind of like, "I am your king."
Yeah.
This is what I look like.
It's like in the Bible, you know, when the coin changes, it says, whose face is on the coin? Caesar's. Well, Christ says, and Caesar's. And they said, we'll give on to Caesar's what is Caesar's. So that's the point. We got to take a break. Anyways, you're listening to Ghost Chronicles International here at TojiNet, and we'll be right back after the following messages.
From Illinois.
You're from Illinois, exactly.
Welcome to TogiNet, radio with a cutting edge.
Do you have a paranormal event, book, or something else you want people to know about? Then why not advertise it on Ghost Chronicles Radio? With over 150,000 downloads a month, get your message out to an audience that's interested in the subject. We have a plan at a cost that fits your needs. For more information, contact Ron Kolick at anyghostproject@comcast.net or call 978-455-6678.
Located in Illinois, there lies a sleepy little town where nothing is a common occurrence.
You going to that party in town tonight?
Heck yeah! I only turned 18 once.
That is until the night of celebration.
Where the hell is she? Oh, no. No, 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 Jessica!
What's happening?
From the creators of Shadowhunters, Bite Me, comes a tale of primal terror. Grindcore mayhem. Shadowhunters, kill Jessica, kill!
And if you survive part one, this is part two of the first half of tonight's double edition of Ghost Chronicle, mm-hmm. with the next generation to follow.
Yeah. We do. I want to make a program announcement too. Next week we will be having Dr. Jennifer Bazaar, I think her last name is, and she is the director of the Museum of Psychology at some college out in the Midwest. So we'll have her on next week. So you'll have to, just Steve and I will have somebody else who actually talks different than us, because she's not English and she speaks proper English. So
she's more sensible than us.
Now, more sensible than me, anyways.
But hey, anyway. I bought something interesting this week that you'd like.
I like everything. What'd you buy?
A hand grenade.
Ooh.
I thought that'd get your interest.
It's got to be diffused, right?
No.
You can have a live hand grenade in the UK.
Well, no, but obviously it doesn't have the 2 ounces of TNT, trinitrotoluene, toluene explosive in it. Mm. And I was led to believe, you said diffused, I was led to believe that the fuse was inert, but it isn't. The fuse is alive.
Oh, interesting.
Well, it's a percussion cap fuse. So, you know, when the pin fires, the striker hits the thing, which goes bang and then starts this little fuse.
How many seconds do you have on? Is it a British or American grenade?
Russian.
Oh, Russian. Oh, okay.
Well, Polish, actually. Polish manufactured.
My countrymen.
Yeah, it's called a Limona or a lemon.
Mm. Germans had those
stick grenades. They also had more conventionally shaped ones.
Yeah,
but I mean, it was in a
we had the pineapples.
Yeah, well, the American pineapple, the Russian Limona, or this Polish one, mm-hmm. are both copies of a French grenade called the F1.
Ah, there you go.
So they all look virtually the same as one another, because they're all a copy of a French design. But I was very surprised to discover that the fuse was alive, which was interesting.
That would be, yes, very interesting.
Yeah. So I've got to remember, obviously, you know, you can remove the fuse and then you're left with just a cast iron hollow metal ball.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to remember not to take the you'll remember not to pull the pin out, because this little percussion cap will go bang.
How many seconds do you have?
Somewhere between 1 and 4.
Oh, I thought it was longer than that.
There are several different versions. The one I've got apparently is 1 to 4 seconds.
Okay.
Then there was one that had no delay.
One's not a hell of a lot of time to pull the pin and throw it.
Well, they weren't well made.
I guess not.
I mean, who was going to bring it back and go, oh, that fuse you sold me that was 3 seconds went off after two? Yeah, bring it back and complain. Yeah. But they, so I've been, I was reading about them after I'd acquired it to try and, you know, learning. And they made several versions. There was a 9-second one so that they could attach it to a rifle or a catapult and shoot it further.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a 0-second instantaneous fuse, so they could pull the pin, then put the grenade down as a booby trap, so that if anybody moved it, the pin would come up.
Right.
Yeah. So
they used to have the ones they could stuff down the rifle barrel that had the little things on them.
Yeah, the spigot. It was basically a short metal rod.
Yeah.
And then a blank cartridge was put in, and the metal rod was shoved into the barrel, wasn't it? Shot out the end.
Yeah.
But I've got to hand it to the Russians. Their design is cleverer than the American or French original.
Really?
Because what the Russians did is they standardized the thread. So you get a box of grenades, and then you get a box of, or a separate sealed can of fuses.
Mm-hmm.
And you could, it didn't matter whether, and they did this with guns as well. They're incredibly naughty, the Russians. So they had this coil of wire around the fuse, around the screw, mm-hmm. which meant that they could screw their fuses into German or American grenades. But the American and German fuses wouldn't fit into the Russian grenade.
Well, that doesn't make sense, because the American would be more of a, I forget what it's called, the Imperial, whatever it's called, versus metric.
And they also did it with guns as well. If you look at the, you know, the artillery shells that are in use, the Russians milled their barrels to be 1 millimeter, and their ammunition to be 1 millimeter, I think, smaller than their NATO counterparts. So that if you took a Russian shell, you know, if you found a Russian ammunition dump, mm-hmm. and thought, oh, great, we're going to shoot all this stuff back at the Russians with our guns, it won't fit.
Mm.
But they can come across a British, a NATO ammunition dump and shoot all our stuff back at us.
Hmm. Crafty. Oh, there you go.
Crafty.
So.
Sneaky Russians.
One of the topics I did want to bring out is automatic writing. And it's, you know, there are famous cases like that of Pearl Curran and somebody in your neck of the woods, Geraldine Cummins.
Yeah, well, yes, very close to where I live. In fact, just a few miles down the road.
Yeah.
With the cross correspondence.
Which she was studied by quite a bit, right?
She was. She was worked very closely with the SPR. They devised the early founders of the SPR, so Myers and Gurney and Podmore, devised this impenetrably, because they were all Oxford classically trained academics.
Mm-hmm.
And so using Greek classic mythology tales, they constructed this elaborate, almost impenetrably elaborate code that would, you know, be understood as a message from the other side. The trouble is, they made it so bloody impenetrable that, you know, 100 years later, people are still struggling to understand the messages and to work out whether they were accurate or whether they were truthful. And the idea being that there were a number of automatic writers, including Cummings, who worked under under the title of Mrs. Verrill, who would all send their automatic writings into the SPR, where they would be deciphered, and great things were claimed of them. But of course, because nobody really, even today, nobody really understands the complexity of the codes that we use, mm-hmm. there's still wiggle room for argument. But interestingly, because Mrs. Verrill was living not very far away, and after her death, her family donated some items of hers to one of the spiritualist churches. Mm-hmm. And about 10 years ago, one of the particular spiritualist churches in question closed down. And about 3 feet from where I'm speaking to you now is the actual table that she sat at to do her automatic writing.
Oh, that's damn cool. Yeah, in 1957, W.H. Slater, Honorary Secretary of the SPR, approached Cummings and asked if she would do an experiment. She agreed. And then for the next 3 years, she received scripts from Wilfred Combe Tennant, who mm-hmm. had died the year before.
Yeah, well, Winifred Coombe Tennant was one of the key players, and she was actually the one who resided closest to me. She lived in Carmarthen, or the family had a home in Carmarthenshire.
Mm-hmm.
And it's her table that I have.
Ah, very cool. Very, very cool. Of course, jealousy is just sitting in, but...
No, it's just a plain wooden side table.
That doesn't matter, Steve. It doesn't matter.
You know, it was just
a story.
You know, it was just a convenient piece of furniture that she lent upon.
Mm-hmm.
That was in her boudoir where she went to do her automatic writing. Yeah. And then afterwards, Coombe Tennant's table went to the spiritualists. You know, as a sort of, you might be interested in having this. And then, of course, you know, these places start to close down. Spiritualism started to dwindle.
Mm-hmm.
The number of spiritualist churches shrunk. And some of these items found their way
into here. Your house.
Yeah, including some of the pictures off the walls and other bits and pieces.
God.
Because
are you going to bequeath those to someone after you kick the bucket?
Well, that's the plan. All thanks to the good offices of my wife, who through her job gets to meet lots of property developers, and lots of property developers are often faced with this place is absolutely full of stuff, and we need to get rid of it. You know, we've been offered like 20 or 30 church pews if we wanted them. But where are you going to put the bloody things?
I know it.
You know, it's like you cannot possibly. And the sad truth is they end up in the skip.
Yeah, I know. That's so sad.
Or burnt on bonfires because, you know, they're often, you know, 20 or 30 foot long. And, you know, therefore way too big for, you know, modern use, and nobody wants them and nobody can ship them or move them around. Smaller ones, yeah, they can fetch money, big money sometimes if they're decorated, but the bigger ones, like, no, nobody wants them. But, you know, the open cupboards and in the cupboard are all these, like, you know, old, cool spiritualist paintings or, you know, wall hangings and stuff that nobody wants.
Oh, see, I got it. You could open up a school or a school museum, and you could have the Stephen Parsons Institute for research and technology. That would be
and
spirit
old furniture.
Icron spirit. It's perfect.
And old furniture.
Anchorman's spirit.
Do you know, it's heartbreaking because when these opportunities have arisen, and obviously I've gone along and selected a few items,
mm-hmm.
You know, spiritualist prayer books and spiritualist hymn books, and there might be another 400 there. And it's like, they're just going to get burned.
Mm. So sad.
And there's nothing I can do about it.
Apart
from rescue one or two. Yeah, I could send you one, except you know the cost of postage across the Atlantic.
I might even pay for that.
Well, I'm still working on getting you a crying boy jigsaw.
Oh, yeah, I was just thinking of that. Well, they didn't have any crying boys in there.
There was plenty. Well, I've come across two more.
Did you really?
But they're on hardboard. And there's no way, you know, that they can't be posted.
Yeah, I know. I understand.
I mean, unless I made it into a jigsaw.
You know, I go back to the top.
A canvas, I could at least roll it up and put it in the
That's
tube.
True. Yeah.
But, you know, they're all on bloody board.
I know it. Going back to the spirit writing stuff, and you know,
yeah.
Pearl Curran, you're familiar with that case, right?
Yes.
So she was supposedly channeling Patience Worth, who was an English person. And so if you look at it another way of view, was she really contacted the dead, or was she merely the reincarnation of Patience Worth?
Or neither.
Or neither.
And this goes back to the conversation we had about Edison quite recently. Mm-hmm. Because how do you know that they are actually channeling anybody at all apart from their inner subconsciousness?
Mm.
You know, you think of what the mind can do when you daydream, when you go to sleep at night. You know, my wife,
know that.
Well, my wife was eating cake with Robert Downey Jr. the other night, and then accused me. And, you know, and in another dream, you know, she woke up in the morning, whacked me across the head and told me I've been unfaithful to her. But which is the reality? I mean, there are people, science, you know, men of science who have postulated that which is the reality, or are both realities true? You know, do we have an alternate existence in our
dream? Yeah, I mean, I was just going to think of that. Was she perhaps seen in an ultimate dimension, or, you know, how they, talk about a lot of that now, where everything happens.
I mean, you know, we don't fully understand the mind or what constitutes even consciousness.
Or reality.
And so, or reality. So how do we know which, you know, we call the dream state, and, you know, we can do some very bizarre, we can fly, we can leap tall buildings and eat cake with Robert Downey Jr. Mm-hmm. in our dreams, but is that really only the imagination, or is that some other alternate reality that we're actually existing in?
Fair enough.
So when it comes to automatic writing or things like that, you always have to consider, well, is the person reaching out to somebody else, to another entity, to another consciousness, and channeling their thoughts? Mm-hmm. And there have been people who have written, you know, poems and books, and, you know, Arthur Conan Doyle wrote a dozen more books after he died through mediums. Or is it, and Edison has given innumerable sets of, you know, instructions and plans for spirit communication devices during seances and in automatic writings. And I think during one of your seances, you had instructions supplied to you during the seance from the supposed spirit realm. Or are we really just in touch with our alternate consciousness, our subconsciousness?
Right.
You know, it's a conundrum, isn't it?
It is. It's because we don't understand, or is the matrix real?
Well, you know, there are scientists that are studying that phenomenon.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. That's why this, you know, we get excited, people get excited about the eclipse, when there's so much other stuff in this world that requires much more attention than we are given it, and versus something that, you know, we can predict.
Then you're also facing, you brought it back to the eclipse again, but you're also faced with this. There are a lot of people, and there were a lot of people on X who were saying that the eclipse isn't real, that the world is flat, and that, you know, this is. There were people saying that they saw two suns during the eclipse, and how can the moon, which appears, you know, white or lights up the night sky, how can it be suddenly dark?
Oh my God, they just don't understand science.
No, but we live in a world where, you know, I think we said once before, where the mentally ill are celebrated. Yeah. And that'll make me popular. But, you know, instead of treating them, we give them, you know, TikTok and other platforms, and they can gain followers and tell us all about their wacky ideas.
It happens much longer here in the U.S. We were getting... They gave him the ultimatum.
Which one's TikTok. That?
TikTok.
Oh yeah, and did you see who then used TikTok the next within an hour of that ultimatum being given?
No, who?
Biden.
No, whatever.
You couldn't make it up, but it actually happened.
Here's, he forgot where he was.
We're going to ban TikTok, and then the White House announced it on TikTok.
Yeah,
but, yeah, that's a bit, yeah, okay.
But yeah, that's the way it rolls anyway. Oh, going back to
automatic writing.
That thing we brought up about last week, which was that Dear Abby thing with the guy who had the body in the backyard and took 50 years worth of notes and pictures.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The clever man.
Yeah. And to me today, we actually brought it up again on the morning show because I think it was the first. Anyways, the one thing I thought about, I mean, is how is that, you know, so he was an amateur scientist in reality, right? I mean, you and I were young. You know, what's the difference between that and, you know, being an amateur astrologer or something else, as long as it wasn't legal? So,
well, nothing at all, except I bet you his garden smelled.
I was behind the barn. The barn probably smelled more than that did.
Well, possibly. But that's how science evolved, because people were curious and they went, what happened? Well, yeah, what happens when a cadaver decomposes? Because we just bury them and forget about them. Well, we need to know why, so let's study it.
And you know, other people said, like, oh, well, that was so sacrilegious. He's not honoring his father. It's like, oh, my God. I says, how many people have gone to their father's graves? How many times? He went to him every single day for 50 years. How much more honoring could you do?
I think that's a fantastic way to honor someone, because it's, yes, they're seeing them every day for 50 years. And instead of just rotting away in the ground and forgotten,
it
becomes something meaningful and something lasting, because his notes and his records and his documents have contributed to our knowledge. Is it any different than, you know, here in the UK, you can leave your body to science?
Yeah,
and then, you know,
we can do that in the US too as well.
Yeah. I mean, that's surely a good thing for those that want to do it. Mm-hmm. And something that we should be celebrating. And particularly, you know, I mean, with cost of funerals like thousands, they do throw in a free funeral afterwards.
Oh, that's pretty nice.
So, you know, there is a, you know, pecuniary advantage.
Yeah. And you have the donations too, where people, you know, you save lives with your body parts. So
Yeah. Well, here in the UK, we are automatically considered to be organ donors now.
Oh, that's pretty good.
We have an opt-out system, not an opt-in system.
Oh, that's pretty good.
So, it used to be the other way around, but then there was a widespread movement and an act of parliament, and it changed to an opt-in system. It's part of our driving license or our passport.
And here in the U.S., of course, here in Boston, we just transplanted that pig's, kidney or liver? It must have been a kidney, into a human. And it took and everything, which is simply amazing. It's the first time it's been done. They've put organs in before, but this one was actually genetically grown for this purpose, which is so intriguing when you look at, I mean, that's, you look at stuff like that. That's, to me, is amazing.
Then you get the flip side of that is you get people going, oh, you shouldn't be mean to the animals, experimenting on them. And I encountered one of these. I mean, gratuitous.
Have you ever heard of survival of the fittest? I'm just curious.
Well, gratuitous experimentation.
Darwin's experiment.
You know, testing hair dye on animals is wrong, or giving dogs cigarettes is just ridiculous. But there was a lady who accosted me a few weeks ago on a Saturday afternoon and was, you know, ranting about animal experiments and medical science being grotesque. And I said to her, well, do you know any diabetics? Well, I'm diabetic, she said. I said, well, you wouldn't be alive if they didn't do experiments, because insulin was developed from dogs, testing on dogs. And the first insulin was obtained from pigs. Mm-hmm. and cattle.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't be here, love. So, you know, you should be celebrating animal experimentation.
The first clone was in Yuck Country, right? Dolly
the sheep.
Yeah, Dolly the sheep.
And she's now in the Edinburgh Science Museum.
She is. Cool.
Yeah, not obviously alive and running about.
But immortalized.
Immortalized and stuffed. We went to see Dolly the sheep a couple of years ago. She's in a glass
cabinet. Did you really? Oh, that's pretty cool.
She's in a glass cabinet.
I got to get over there one of these days. It's driving me nuts.
Well, didn't you hit upon a plan to come over?
I do. My seance group wants me to go start a GoFundMe. I says, you're out of here, freaking my. I'm not going to. Oh, yeah, no, that would so go against everything I believe in.
Well, I mean, there's an easy way to get over it if you've got a small rubber boat.
If I got what?
Small rubber boat.
But anyway. All right, I see we're at the 2-minute mark, so we got to wrap it up. So anyways, we covered a lot today. I have no idea what it was, but we covered a lot.
No, nor have I, but it was fun, as ever.
And next week, stay tuned. We will have a guest. We will have Dr. Jennifer Bazar. I think it's Bazar, B-A-Z-A-R, from the Psychology Museum out in the Midwest. So that'll be intriguing.
I think it's also worth just interjecting and saying, if any of our listeners have got any questions or subjects that they want covered or they want to ask us, we'll, you know, just drop us a...
Oh, yeah. We've done a couple of shows on questions.
Yeah, we have. And it'd be cool to get some more.
We don't. We listen to you. Anyways, we got to go. You've been listening to Ghost Chronicles International right here on TojiNet with Steve Poss and Ron Kohler. Brought to you by Circles of Wisdom, 286 Merrimack Street, Methuen, Massachusetts. The Glant Messier Family Law Group, 15 High Street, not the end of Massachusetts. And our very good friends on Ghost Chronicles Radio on Patreon. Become a member. Bye. Good night. God bless. Stay out of the eclipse.
Good night. The eclipse is gone.
Well, you survived it.
Ghoulies to ghosties, long-leggedy beasties, and things that go bump in the night. Deliver us, good Lord.